Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 6th of December 2015. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Nick from Partially Obstructed View, Gareth James, Terry Paddock and Tim from Civilian Theatre. We're now going to talk about Funny Girl, which is on at the Menier Chocolate Factory. This is the musical by Jules Stein, Bob Merrill, with a book by Isabel Lenhart, which made a massive star out of Barbara Streisand when it was done back in 1964. And in fact, it hasn't been done again on Broadway since then. There's been a couple of attempts to do it in this country. More recently, the Chichester Festival Theatre a few years ago did a production of it with Samantha Sparrow. The Menier Chocolate Factory's version, it has Sheridan Smith in, and it did something quite remarkable. Not only did it sell out incredibly quickly at the Menier, they announced a West End transfer before the musical had opened. The musical itself is a story of Fanny Bryce, who was a comedian and singer from the early days of vaudeville in the United States. She made a few film appearances. One of them is in Ziegfeld Follies, and I think one of them is kind of semi-autobiographical film, but I'm not absolutely certain. Nick, tell me more about this musical and what you thought of it.
The film version is one I'd seen a lot of times growing up, because it was always my sister's favourite film when she was little, and it's still one of her favourites, which is why I took her to this. So I'm quite familiar with the film version already, and it's quite interesting to see something like this that has so rarely been produced. I think there's reasons other than Barbara Streisand that it hasn't been produced as much. I think there are reasons to do with the show itself, but I suppose it's all one of these things that kind of feeds into the legend, and everything kind of feeds both sides, is that because it's not been done for so long, because it's so associated with Barbara Streisand, then nobody's really got anything else to compare it to other than Barbara Streisand's performance, so it's all a bit of a vicious circle. So I think going in, you always knew that Sheridan Smith was going to do her own thing, and she does. In terms of Fanny Bryce's career in this story, it pretty much just keeps going up. She's very much from rags to riches, but the emotional side of the story is where things aren't quite as successful for her. One of the first people who kind of believes in her is this kind of slick professional gambler called Nicky Arnstein, who's here is played by Darius, currently called Darius Campbell, but these things do change where he's concerned. And he's somebody who puts a word in with people, and eventually she finds herself the star of the Ziegfeld Follies. And she very quickly falls for him, and it does seem to be mutual, and they do. They have kind of a tempestuous relationship where they get on fine when they see each other, but they don't see each other for months at a time, so he's kind of always disappearing on these mysterious and, as it turns out, quite as dodgy as they sound, business deals and gambling trips that are always kind of leaving him either hugely rich or completely penniless. But they do eventually get married, but by the second act, things are only going downhill for them there. So that's essentially the story, is her professional life is going great guns throughout, and her personal life is not quite so much. And I think it's a fun production. Seeing it in the Menier, I think it is already very much, I don't think they've really directed it for the Menier. They knew they were going to Savoy, and it is very much staged for a bigger theatre. But it's still nice to kind of see Sheridan Smith in an intimate space like this, because she is now somebody who kind of can command the big stages. It's enjoyable enough. You know, it's very well done. I think it's not actually that strong a show. It's got a few very iconic songs, obviously, like People and Rain on My Parade. And all the kind of strongest songs are in the first act. I had heard a lot about it being very top-heavy, and I don't think the second act is a complete disaster, as some people have said, but it's certainly not as strong as the first act. I think there's something quite interesting in the way that Sheridan Smith tackles the role. I think particularly with the singing, she's not really trying to compete at all with Streisand, or at all in the style that you'd expect from these songs, because she's not really belting them out. She's going for a much more understated performance of the songs, which is quite surprising on songs that are known for being huge, huge belters. I found that quite a nice way of performing them. I thought they were quite moving, although I did wonder on the night I saw it, which I think was the night after press night, if she'd strained her voice a bit on press night because she did sound a little bit croaky at moments. But other than that, I think the less kind of big style that she doesn't really go in for in the singing is a deliberate thing. I don't think it's just because her voice was maybe a bit sore. And she only really goes for it at the end, really, for the finale and kind of the reprises. But she's absolutely not restrained in the comedy, which she's always been very good at. I think it really is, despite the fact that there's quite a large cast around her, it might as well be a one-woman show because it is that kind of show. There's only a couple of people who get a chance, really, to make an impression at some point. There's the trio of old ladies, Fanny Bryce's mother and her two friends, who do get some nice little moments. But this really is kind of a star vehicle. And I think Sheridan Smith does well out of it. I think, essentially, this was what I was expecting. It's not the best musical, really, but it is a good showcase for Sheridan Smith, and she does deliver. Gareth?
I agree with you that it isn't a great show, and I don't think Gypsy is a great show either, to be honest. And I think that could be a British perspective, because they're both quintessentially American showbiz stories. And they're quite conservative, I think. Well, today, they feel quite conservative. And in this particular case, the problem for me is that I think that they're a bit afraid to mess with it. And I think the American director is just being too conservative in his production. And I think the design is too conservative. And I think in particular, I think the choreography is too conservative. And I would have quite liked to have seen another team who were a bit less scared have a go at it. Because if you compare it with Gypsy, I think Gypsy felt much fresher than this feels on Revival, although I have to say I hadn't seen the show before, and I'm much less familiar with the film than you are. But Gypsy felt like a much fresher take on an old show. This just seems like a bit more of a museum piece, to be honest. And it is definitely crying to leave the Menier, because it's just sitting there sort of saying, put me on a big stage, please. And it will, in my opinion, be better at the Savoy. And I left the theatre saying, oh, gosh, I want to go see it in the Savoy now. And I have since already booked. And I have to say, it was incredibly, it's a very heavily booked in the Savoy. I mean, we were struggling to get tickets for about the third month of the 3 months run.
It's already extended. It's already extended, yeah.
I think Sheridan Smith, and I agree with you, I think she's quite rightly decided, you know, I'm going to make this role my own, I'm not going to try and do a Streisand, but I think that's absolutely the right thing to do. And like Imelda Staunton in Gypsy, I mean, she's a very diminutive lady, and particularly up against Darius Campbell's very tall leading man. But she does have this, you know, she is a great actress, and in particular, very good comic timing. And she does dance well and move well, and she can sing. And I think that, you know, what they call the triple threat works very much to her favor here. And above all else, I think she just has this incredible personality as an actress, which she then invests in the role. And you're kind of rooting for her. And when she commands the stage on her own, which she does at the end of Act 1 and the end of Act 2, the end of Act 1, you just kind of want to punch the air and kind of, yes, I'm with you. The end of Act 2, you start off, she's sitting at the dressing room table and she's quite sad. And it is very moving. And then moments later, she kind of turns that around. And then, you know, you're wanting to punch the air again, where she kind of lifts you for the end of the show. So for me, the show's two greatest moments are Sheridan Smith sitting on her own on the Menier stage. And so that is probably something we won't see as well on the Savoy. But when the rest of the cast are on, it's all a bit cramped, really. Apart from the fact I thought the production was conservative, I mean, I did enjoy the evening, so I don't want, you know, I'm not knocking it. I did enjoy the evening. I actually thought there were some really nice performances in this. I mean, Darius Campbell has sort of impressed me a couple of times before, and impressed again here, really. I think he does have good presence, and he does have a really good voice. And he seemed to have, I think, good chemistry with Sheridan Smith. And the three ladies, as you mentioned, I think, I mean, it's a great triple act. Marilyn Cutts plays Fanny's mother, who's really good. And then Gay Soper and Valda Avkis, who are sort of, you know, veterans of many, many years of musicals, are just great. And somehow the older members of the cast kind of do better here, because we also get Bruce Montague, who's a really good Ziegfeld. I mean, I enjoyed it very much. I've never seen the show on stage. You know, it was a great opportunity to do that. I think Sheridan Smith doesn't disappoint. I think she does live up to the hype, because most musical theatre lovers and Sheridan Smith fans in particular have just been getting a bit overexcited about the prospect, really. So enjoyed very much. I just wish that they hadn't been quite so scared of it. You know, it is like Gypsy. The show isn't performed very often. And I think part of the reason is because it's just a bit too iconic. And part of it is because they're both associated with one leading lady. And that's the kind of hard act to follow thing, really. So maybe what will happen now is that, I mean, Imelda Staunton clearly broke the connection between Ethel Merman and Gypsy for me. So maybe Sheridan Smith's going to break the connection between Funny Girl and Barbara Streisand, and maybe we'll see more of this show in the future. Clearly you can't get in to see it now at the Menier, but I think it is definitely something that's worth going to see at the Savoy.
I'm interested to see, because they're already talking about Broadway, I wonder if how they'll react if she does go there, because particularly to the fact that she doesn't kind of remotely go for the big belting approach, because that is really what they seem to like on Broadway. So I can imagine her not kind of doing quite as well if she does take this performance to Broadway, because I think that, you know, they associate doing it well with doing it big and loud, and I wonder whether this would be something that's actually wise to transfer, but I'm sure we'll see what happens.
I suspect that Sonia Friedman's already, who's involved in this, has already got a sort of a provisional deal in place. Because I don't think Sheridan Smith would say things like, I'll be happy to take it Broadway if she hadn't.
Well, exactly.
But I agree with you. If I was Sheridan Smith, I'd be a bit scared about taking it to Broadway. And the only time I'd seen Gypsy before was on Broadway with Bernadette Peters, one of their own, as it were. But there, you know, with Gypsy, they were sort of making these comparisons negatively with Ethel Merman. On the evening I went, there was this enormous 6'6" man in the middle of the show who kind of stood up and very loudly said, well, she ain't no Ethel Merman, turned round and walked out of the theatre. So it's that kind of, I think they are a bit precious about this show, as they are precious about Gypsy. And if I was Sheridan Smith, I might think twice before I cross the Atlantic on this. And she is, of course, an unknown entity there. Here, you know, she is now, has fast become a very much a known entity of theatre, which is, I think, why it sold out so quickly.
We're now going to talk about Linda, which is written by Penelope Skinner and is on at the Royal Court. It's directed by Michael Londhurst and has a set designed by Ez Devlin, which looks like a perfume display at an upscale department store to me. It is actually a rather impressive thing. This play got into the news recently, partially because Noma Dumuzwene came in to take over from the Kim Cattrall at almost the last minute. It was 10 days before opening. This means that she's not quite off book yet and still has to occasionally refer to her script, although by the time people hear this, she's probably word perfect. And she was certainly, for the big speeches, when I saw it, there was no script at all. And even when she did it, she was very adept at hiding the fact that she was reading. She is joined in this play by people like Ian Redford, Dominic Matham, Imogen Byron, Carla Crome, Jazz Diol, Amy Beth Hayes, and Mariel Plummer. The play concerns a woman who is about 55, seems to have the double life, if you like, a successful career and a successful family, but has reached that age where women become invisible, and we see her struggles for that. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Yes, I mean, Linda is a kind of marketing director for this cosmetics company, and she clearly has been very responsible for their success. I mean, she's helped make them a global player, and she's now taken them in a new direction with anti-aging products. Her boss and her colleagues, by and large, revere her. She's very happily married with two daughters. And then her life kind of begins to fall apart, really. It starts with the husband having a fling, and then it gets into her work, where a somewhat Machiavellian employee sets her up. And I won't sort of go into how that unfolds there, but that connects back to her daughters as well. And interwoven in all of this narrative, you know, are things that are, as you say, about attitudes to the female body and aging and the way women are treated compared to men and sort of body fascism, as it's often called. So those issues are, you know, well explored, but inside the narrative of the story. As you say, Ez Devlin has created another one of her extraordinary designs. I mean, this multi-level revolving white structure sits in a pool of water and is able to contain lots of rooms, both at home and in the office. I thought, because the cosmetic company's name is Swan, I thought, in a way, it was meant to be to symbolise a swan. The motto of the company is also rather cringeworthy, changing the world one girl at a time. And there's a kind of, as you say, like a cosmetic counter, there's a sort of bright quite glitzy corporate kind of look here. And we also get a kind of pervading Muzak soundtrack as well. So they all add up to create this image of this kind of organization. So I think the design has kind of maybe prompted Michael Longhurst to go for quite an imaginative staging as well, really. And it does get quite dramatically expressionistic as the play goes on. The lead role is a very big role. I mean, there are an awful lot of lines to learn. And I have to admire Noma Dumezweni for learning that, because that's a Herculean task. And she does occasionally, you know, have a script in hand. But to be honest, I mean, when that's in the office, it's like you're carrying office papers. And when it's at home, it's like you just opened your mail. And when she's making a speech, which she does on a couple of occasions, it's perfectly natural process anyway, really. So I didn't think it was in any way distracting. And I thought she really inhabited the role. I thought it was an absolutely superb performance. I think she was terrific and got a fantastic ovation at the end of it the night I went. And the other performance that impressed me was Amy Beth Hayes, who plays this kind of ice school nemesis that she has in the office, and I thought she pulled that off really, really well. I think it's one of the best of the Royal Court's recent crop of new plays in the main house, though I will say I think it's a bit overlong. I didn't think it quite sustained its 2 hours and 40 minutes, and I felt in particular the first half could have had a few cuts in it. I felt occasionally it went a little heavy-handed on the message and a little melodramatic on the story. But that notwithstanding, it was a new play that I enjoyed, and in particular a performance that towered over for me. So that's where I sit on it. Terry, what about you?
Well, I very much enjoyed it. I thought Noma was fantastic. I am a little biased, as I know her personally. But as soon as I saw the news that Kim Cattrall had withdrawn at short notice and been replaced by Noma, that, to be honest, made it me want to see this play even more. Not just because I'm friendly with Noma, but because I know she is such an amazing actress. And I couldn't imagine anyone better suited to kind of save the day, as it were. At such short notice. And also the way that she came into that, I don't know, it speaks to me also about the themes in the play. So it seemed very appropriate. I was also really reminded watching this play of the recent news. Vicky Featherstone, the artistic director of the Royal Court, caused a few headlines in September, I think it was, when she made a comment on the fact that she thinks critics are harder on plays about women. And it caused a lot of discussion about, you know, are there big issue plays about women facing major obstacles in their lives and that are centered around the women and what's happening in their lives rather than that being sort of secondary to the main thrust of the play. And so this play by Penelope Skinner seemed to answer that question squarely. You know, here is a big play with Shakespearean overt references. It's all about a woman and at a crucial point in her life. And this, for all of the talk about, you know, as you mentioned, that Noma's character, Linda, works for a cosmetics company and is considering women in their getting to this junction in their lives where they are invisible. It looks at that and said, no, let's make this visible. Let's make all of these key issues visible and realize that they're not just issues about women. They are human issues. I suppose that there are many things that are unique to women in the play, but the issue of getting older and feeling challenged by younger colleagues, feeling as if at work, you know, you're being pushed out, that you're being sidelined, that you're getting too old, that you're not seen as the hot young thing anymore, that you are under threat. I mean, I think that we can all identify with those issues. I certainly can. So I love the play for many reasons, and those being one of them. And it's funny, when I was watching, I did at points feel, yeah, it did become a bit melodramatic. Again, I don't want to make any plot spoilers, but the confrontation, there's a key confrontation between Linda and the young challenger in her office place, who it turns out she is related to for other reasons. This young woman also went to school with her older daughter, and they had issues as well. And so there was this incredible scene where also the set and the water and the set all come into play. And, you know, it seemed very much like King Lear to me or something, some incredible storm moment. And all of that was foreshadowed, you know, in the very opening exchanges in the play. I mean, with Linda's daughter, she is talking about in her school dramatics association, she wants to audition for a part and she's got to pick a scene to play, and she wants to pick a Shakespeare scene, but she's bored with the female characters in Shakespeare. So she's considering, is she going to perhaps read from Hamlet as Hamlet or from King Lear? And she has this great observation, which is, I'm just going to consult the script now, that when you watch a story about men, you know the stakes are really high because men might like actually kill each other. Whereas when you watch a story about a woman, it's more like, what's at stake here? Is she going to get married? So basically nothing's at stake. And this play answers that. Many things are at stake. It's not just about whether a woman is going to get married. There's a lot of things happening in women's lives.
Yes, I'm not sure I was as happy with it as everybody else, I have to say. Obviously, in Nomadomizueni, it was very good, and picking up that script, and as I said before, it was fairly invisible throughout. She did that extremely well, and she is a very good actor, and I think, you know, it's all well acted. I did have certain problems with the plays. I did find the nemesis a little bit one-dimensional. I mean, it's, you know, she was a bitch, and that was about it, and there was nothing to her. She's just an ignorant kind of woman. And one of the things, of course, they point out is that Linda is the future for this woman. She is going to become Linda in about 30 years. She will be exactly in the same place that Linda is. And that raises questions of, well, what was Linda like when she was 29? And I did begin wondering about that kind of thing, and not feeling that they would have been the same person or in the same place. And I began wanting a different play halfway through it, and I think that was one of my problems. I was just not watching the play. There were things in it that I wanted changed and addressed, which weren't being, and so I ended up dissatisfied in it because I didn't see the play that I wanted. Now, that's obviously, that's entirely my fault, because you should always go and see the play that you're seeing rather than the one that you're rewriting in your head. But I was in the end dissatisfied by it, although it was an impressive production. I just didn't feel it wasn't the play that I wanted to see at that time. We're now going to talk about Here We Go at the National Theatre. This is a new play by Carol Churchill, and is directed by Dominic Cook, with a design by Vicky Mortimer. It's a play, I think, about death, and how we cope with it, and how we walk towards it. It chiefly stars Patrick Godfrey as sort of the subject, the person who is going along with us, as it were. Tim, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
So, since seeing Here We Go, I've really been wrestling with what I did actually think about it. And I have sort of oscillated between, well, on one hand, I have to say, really, really finding it a sort of a difficult play, not just to enjoy, but really to like at all. And then on the other hand, kind of respecting it for what it is at least trying to do. So, you are right, it is a play about death, and I think it's also a play which very much is a reflection on how people interact with the dead and with the dying, and with people in the later ages of life. And Carol Churchill has set it up as this kind of a triptych with three very distinct scenes setting a kind of reverse chronology to really sort of embed this sense almost of, I feel, guilt and shame in the audience watching as they reflect on how they may interact with people in the later stages of their own lives. So the first of the three relatively short scenes, the entire play is only about 45 minutes long, is set in a funeral home, and we never see the dead man, but we see how he is portrayed through the reflections of others, and we get this sense of a very kind of vibrant, active and engaged person, really the sort of person who I think we would all perhaps want to be imagined to be like when people reflect on us after we've gone. The play then cuts to black and the lights come up on the lead character, as you say, played very well, I think, by Patrick Godfrey. And this is very much, it's a monologue really at the point of his death, or just after he has died. He is speaking about what it is to be like to be dead in a more secular age, and what it may be like to reflect on that sort of sense of moving between the barrier of consciousness and into the ether. And I found that both moving, but also slightly out of touch with how the rest of the play formed. I thought it, whilst it was well written, I don't think it fully kind of resonated with me. But definitely, I think most people's views of the play are shaped by what is the third act, effectively. And it is a long, drawn out, silent scene of this man at the very last stages of his life being what we can be assumed to be cared for in an old people's home. It is a silent, repetitive scene of a man being dressed and undressed by his carer. It's entirely wordless, and it repeats this one set of actions, I think four, maybe five times over the course of 15, maybe 20 minutes. It's attritional, I think, to say the least, and really pushes the boundaries of what an audience wants to endure. And of course, that is entirely the point. Carol Churchill is making us reflect on how we feel about older people at that point in their lives, how what we say about them at their funerals perhaps doesn't in any way reflect how we interacted with them at the point of their death or near death. And I think a lot of the criticism I've heard is that scene just goes on too long and it's just becomes boring and almost farcical. But I think on reflection, it does need to be that long, because Carol Churchill wants to push the audience into that state. She's held up as one of our sort of great playwrights, and I feel it's inconceivable that she hasn't precisely thought through what she wants to achieve with that scene. My bigger problems with the play is that I don't actually think the first and the second parts of the play are particularly strongly enough written to justify that ending. I didn't think, for me, the performance of the funeral scene worked particularly well, and I didn't think the monologue was particularly strongly written. So overall, I thought it was a mixed bag, and it is both a mixed bag and also a punishing and attritional watch at the same time. So even at 45 minutes, it's certainly not for everyone. Terry, I don't know what you thought.
Well, I thought your summary is fantastic. What a great way of commenting on the play. I agree with a lot of what you say. It was interesting for me seeing Here We Go. I went to it a few days after I was at a non-theatre event, which was a discussion with politicians and care workers about what they believe is the coming adult social care crisis. And a couple of things that came out in that talk just kept playing through my mind as I watched Here We Go. One of them, and this is a direct reference to the final scene that you mentioned, was a care worker who was talking about the challenges that care workers have and that they have very strict time limits for getting their clients dressed and ready for the day. And so they say they, you know, all of this must be done in half an hour. And if they don't do it in half an hour, then, you know, there are implications for their job. And this care worker, this young care worker was saying, you know, it sounds like you think half an hour to get somebody dressed and fed seems like ample time. But then she started saying, but then what about if, you know, this person has these issues, or you're also trying to allow them some element of human dignity to, you know, if they feel that they can do some things themselves, they've been dressing themselves all their lives, you try to allow them to do that. So she was talking about how quickly that half hour is eaten into, particularly if you do try to remember that these are humans that you're dealing with and that you do want them to still have dignity in their lives at that age. That was completely played out for me in that final scene. And it was very uncomfortable sitting there for, it must have been, yeah, at least nearly half of the play, 20, 25 minutes, maybe it felt longer, but watching the young carer dress Patrick Godfrey's character, undress him repeatedly. And basically that, what was coming across to me was that was his entire day. That was the event of his day, getting dressed and undressed. And it takes that long. The other thing that I kept thinking of, and the quote that kept replaying in my mind as I was watching the play from this earlier discussion was, why do we as a society not talk more openly, more publicly? Why are we not more aware that this is a crisis? Adult social care, as the population ages, and how do we take care of people in the final stages of their life? And one of the politicians commented, well, the thing is, people don't like to talk about old age because they don't like to be reminded of death. They know this is coming for their parents. This is coming for them, and it frightens them. And that's also why some people feel uncomfortable in how, as you commented, Tim, how they interact with someone in those final stages seems to be very different from how they remember the person often when they were sort of in the prime of their life. So I had a lot of the same problems with the play as you did, but for me, it caught me at a time when I was thinking about the issues, and I think the play raised and reinforced some of those issues in a very powerful way. With particularly the comment about we don't like to think about death, the first scene that was played out for me really well in that, yes, they were remembering the man, but then each of the characters who were at the funeral, every few minutes they'd interject with, I die however many years later, I die 10 years later, and then you hear a brief synopsis of, you know, what their death is going to be like. And I do think that is what's going through many of our heads, consciously or subconsciously, when we go to funerals. We are thinking about, when is it coming for me and how is it going to happen?
I have to say, I did wonder if people were supposed to react to the final scene. You know, whether Carol Churchill and the director would have been quite happy if people had started barracking the play a bit, because I also felt that there was, as well as all the things that you've brought up, there was also that feeling that this is deliberately telling you not to be sheep. This is deliberately telling you to sort of do something, even if it is just to shout at the stage for a bit, because it is that such a long thing. I've heard this kind of thing described before, where you just keep doing something, and it does go through periods. People go through a period where they are amused, then they're extremely bored, and then they are amused again. I think we got to the extremely bored part of that section. I think once you realise that the cycle is going to repeat itself, you then feel very unhappy about it. But nobody reacted when I was there, and I think I got the feeling that perhaps the writer and the director would quite like people to react. We'll have to see if some people are encouraged to react to it. I would have liked to have seen personally a little bit more of the whole rest of the cast, because it is a very good cast that are assembled for the first part of this play. I mean, we've got Susan Engel, Hazel Holder, Joshua James, Amanda Lawrence, Stuart McQuarrie, Elena Matura, and Alan Williams. So lots of good names in there and good performances. So I wanted to see a lot more, but yeah, I think I want to see something a little bit more substantial from Carol Churchill. If they're not going to let me see one day, let me see Serious Money again, I do want to see something more substantial. Apparently, there is a play about 50-year-old women with, I think, Deborah Finlay in it coming up for, I think that's at the Royal Court next year, by Carol Churchill. So that could be something to look forward to.
Yes, that's been announced already. Yeah, it's a great cast.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.